Today is St. David's Day, and one of the emblems of St. David's Day is the daffodil. And so we're all going to receive a daffodil this morning. I was going to give out daffodil bulbs, or even real daffodils, but I went against that idea, and I'll explain that in a moment. So I'd like everyone to have one of these. So pick one and then send them backwards. And while we're doing this, there'll be a nice little song playing in the background. You can sing along if you know the words. I can probably assure you after a minute, it'll be so irritating you'll want me to turn it off. Okay, there we go.
I love the mountains. I love the rolling hills. I love the flowers. I love the daffodils.
1 minute, I said.
I love the fireside when the lights are low. Boom diada, boom diada.
You can sing along as well if you want to, by the way. And you can wave your daffodils if you want to while we're singing this. If you really want to get into the... It lends itself to a left and right and a sway, doesn't it? You can look at each other while you're doing this as well if you want to, because that will make you laugh a little bit more. If you could see yourself, you would be seriously worried. Instrumental break. Don't worry, you'll get a chance to sing one more time. Once everyone has a daffodil, if you could bring the spare ones forwards, please. There you go. Wasn't that lovely? Look, toasted marshmallows around the fire. Did you fade that out, Ben?
No.
Did you fade that out? Has it finished? Has it truly finished? Yeah, it has finished. It's okay. Suddenly thought he was depriving us of one last verse. Okay. So as I said, I was going to give us all a daffodil bulb, although you wouldn't really be able to plant them until August, so it's a bit of a waste. But actually, daffodil bulbs are kind of a bit poisonous. They do say don't give them to children, so that wasn't very good for an all-age service, was it really? So, because inside a daffodil bulb, and inside daffodils, there are some poisonous crystals. And although it's a lovely flower, and you know, it may be one of your favourite flowers, they're actually quite dangerous in some ways because they have kind of an insecticide built into them that prevents some of the insects attacking them. But also squirrels tend to keep away from them because they're a bit dangerous. But if a dog starts digging around a daffodil and actually eats a daffodil, the dog can become quite sick because of its constitution linked up with these crystals that are within a daffodil. So a daffodil, even though it looks very nice, can be a bringer of great harm. Who would have thought? A dangerous daffodil may be lurking in Frimley somewhere. On the other hand, scientists have discovered that there is a natural compound in a daffodil, and it's called narcyclacene, which is actually being used or being considered to be used to help treat brain cancer. So in a daffodil, there's also great potential for good. Hooray, we've redeemed the daffodil. So it has the ability to bring great harm, but also it has within it, so people have found, scientists have found, the ability to do great good. And I guess, just like us, we have the potential to do harm, we have the potential to do good. And the story we're looking at today, building on what we looked at last week in the adult church, about the potential to do harm or the potential to do good, and the story we're going to look at, hopefully, will emphasize a little bit more about the potential to do good. Now, in order to tell this story, I need four people, three of whom will need to read some words, but not have to act too much. And the fourth person doesn't need to say anything at all or read anything. So just have a think for a moment, saying, when I came here this morning, I knew it was an all-age service, and this is the week I'm going to volunteer. I've never volunteered before. This is the week. Did you wake up this morning and say, it's an all-night service, yippee, and this is the week I'm going to volunteer? Or did you wake up this morning and say, oh no, it's an all-night service, I'm going to sit in the back two rows? I'm just saying, it could be that, it could be that. So, what I'm needing is, I'm looking at a family today. We're looking at a grandfather, his son, and his grandson. Okay, well, it doesn't have to be played by different the appropriate ages, and it doesn't have to be played by those genders. So we can have men or women taking part. So first of all, I'm looking for someone who will be the granddad. Somebody like to be the grand. Well, oh, Mike. Very good, thank you. Now then, is this granddad likely to be bringing harm or good? Just take a look at him. Okay, I know he's on the prayer team, and he's got a badge that looks like a daffodil. I know that. But is he a bringer of harm or is he a bringer of good? Would you like to just go up and take your seat, Grandad, please? You can take it up there. Thank you very much. Now, we need somebody who will play the part of the son of Grandad. Anybody like to volunteer? It doesn't have to be genetically the son. Doesn't have to be. Come on then, son of Grandad. Okay. So, I wonder if does this person look like the bringer of harm or the bringer of good? What do you think? Bring of good. Okay, so let's just put a couple of things on you. Okay, so I'm going to give you a nice robe. Tiny bit Jedi-ish, but never mind. And we have a nice belt. Do you want to tie that around you? Very nice. It suits you. It's very nice. Okay, there we go. And then you've got that sword can go in that hoop. There. Okay, so if you want to just stand by here, near your dad. Okay, there we go. Right, so I now need someone who is the grandson of the granddad. Okay, who would like to be the grandson? This is the grandson. Thank you very much. Come along here then. Okay, now you're only five, okay? So today you're a five-year-old. So if you can come and sit on this seat here, just on this step here, please. Pop yourself there, and because you're five, you get the rabbit. Okay, there we go. So that's your little friend for now. Okay, so that's the granddad, the son, and the grandson. And now I need somebody who's going to be the friend of the son. Right, you are the friend. So you become today... Right, turn around. Oh, it's only a daffodil. You've just lost a friend. You ain't got a friend in her. Okay, who else would like... Come on then. Well done. Right. Okay, that's very... Right, very nice. It does suit you. Okay, so potential perhaps to do harm or to do good. And in fact, this character over here has the potential to do harm and good. So you are a daffodil. And just so Grandad doesn't think... Okay, so there we are, Grandad. You have the potential to do good and harm. So we've got people who have all the potential to do harm or to do good. Now, actually, this one over here is actually King Saul. So let's just see if we can get a crown on your head as well. That'll do. And so we've got King Saul, his son, whose name is? Jonathan. His friend, whose name is? And his son, whose name is? Mephibosheth, very good. Who in their right mind would call their child Mephibosheth? Anyway, Jonathan did. Okay, Jonathan called his son Mephibosheth. Now, the thing about this particular guy up here is that he could have led very, very well. He could have been a fantastic king. And to some degrees, he didn't lead too bad at the very beginning. But his problem was he was very jealous. He didn't want anybody else to be more popular than him. And the problem is that David over here became a little bit more popular than him. And that was because David fought Goliath, remember that story, and then Saul thought, do you know what, I want him in my army, so he came and moved into the palace. But the problem is that all the people started to say that David actually was almost better than Saul. So this is what the crowd shouted. So you are the crowd. So let's shout this twice through. This is what the crowd shouted after David had won the battle against the Philistines. They all shouted this. After three, one, two, three. Saul has slain his thousands, and David his tens of thousands. Saul has slain his thousands, and David his tens of thousands. Saul was not a happy daffodil. No, he wasn't. And as a result, he wanted to get rid of David. So, it says in the Bible that he got his spear, or his javelin. Right, Jonathan, you might want to just move aside here. And on at least a couple of occasions, he threw the javelin. Now, let's just have a little bit right here, just for a moment here. For comic effect, you're not going to move. But obviously, in real life, this is seriously dangerous. And David, do not try this at home with your javelin. All right, please leave the javelin on the wall when you go home. So we're just going to see, if King Saul had been Mike, would he have been able to have hit David with his javelin? So here we go. You have two goes. Ooh, skinned his nose. Okay, you have one more go. Oh, left leg. In real life, he did miss because David managed to dodge it and he ran away and he went and hid. So he just went over here. So you just stand over there for a moment. Now, Jonathan had every potential of being just like his dad. Okay, very jealous. And of course, Jonathan was due to be the king when Saul died. And Saul didn't know that David had already been anointed by the prophet Samuel to be the future king. And if Saul had known that, he would have said, oh, even more reason to get rid of David. He's a definite threat to my kingdom. Now, Jonathan could have thought the same thing. Because I don't want any threat, because once daddy goes, I'm king. So he could have looked at David and thought, he's been very popular. He could try and take my position. So he could have become very jealous. He could have been a very bad daffodil. But instead, something different happens. So if you took him over here, side by side, they actually became really, really good friends. And rather than fight against each other, they decided they will fight for each other. And what they did is in those days, is that in order to be able to say that I'm really close with you and let's be as if we're one, they would do something which was called, they would make a covenant, which in a sense was a real dedicated promise. So you're right down there, Mephibosheth. Okay, you'll be in the story in a minute. Okay, so they made a covenant, a real deep, honest promise to each other to look after each other. And some people say it was actually a peace treaty to stop warring between two people. And so what it says is this. Jonathan made a covenant with David. This is 1 Samuel 18. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow and belt. So, if you want to give the sword to David, don't cut yourself, okay, thank you, and your belt. Okay, you did have clothes on underneath, obviously, you know, and a belt, you can hold that, you don't have to put it on for now, and the robe, thank you very much. So, a couple of things were happening there. One, Jonathan was saying, everything that I am, I'm giving to you. All that I am, the signs of who I am, I'm giving to you because we're one. So these robes, you know, like sometimes you wear uniforms and uniforms show everybody who you are and what you stand for. Well, these were all part of him being the king's son. And so he was giving it to David and said, look, I'm recognizing the fact that everything about me I'm giving to you. I'm going to fight for you. If you're in danger, I'm going to fight for you. And if something happens to you, I'll look after your family. That's what the covenant was all about. And the second thing was, in a sense, that Jonathan was almost saying, these are things that the king's son has, and I'm recognizing that really you're going to be the king. We don't know for sure exactly how much they talked about it, but I kind of think that David, if he was that close to Jonathan, would have said, you know what, Samuel anointed me to be future king. And when he knew that the friendship was good, he knew that actually Jonathan won't get too cross and jealous because actually they were really close together. So what happened is that Jonathan said, I'm going to watch out for you. So David, you're a little bit scared of this man over here. And who wouldn't be looking like that? So what happens is that Jonathan, when he hears that Saul is out to get David, David goes into hiding. So you come over here. And let's put that over your head because you're in hiding. All right. So Jonathan then comes to Saul. And you have a little bit of a talking role now. So here we go. So you're going to go to Saul. Saul is out to try and get David. And you don't think this is right. There we go. If you want to hold that and you want to read that out for us.
Okay, let the king not do wrong to his servant. David is not wronged. You and what he has done has benefited you greatly. He took his life in his hands, and when he killed the Philistines, the Lord has won great victory for all of Israelites. And you saw it, you were and glad. Why then would you do wrong to an innocent man like David by killing him for no reason?
Excellent. And Saul listened to his son, And he said in response,
as surely as the Lord lives, David will not be put to death.
Okay, so it seems after all this time, Saul is going good. He's becoming a good daffodil leader. So what happens is that Jonathan comes back and tells David, look, because he's still hiding, look, we need to get him out of hiding. Okay, so he says, hello. And so he comes back and says, it's okay, it's safe, so you can come back to the palace and you can start working again as a soldier. So everything seems fine until David turns out to be an excellent warrior. And guess what? Saul gets jealous again. So what does Saul do when he gets jealous? He throws javelins. So he has another go at throwing a javelin. So you have two goes. Come on, here we go. Oh, it's that wind, isn't it, really? It's that one more go. Oh, safe. Okay, so he tries again. Now, David's not having any more of this. So David goes off again and goes into hiding. All right, so back into hiding. And Jonathan tries his best to talk his dad out of it all, but he won't have anything to do with it. So Jonathan goes and finds out where David is hiding. Because you kind of know whether or not you kind of made that secret agreement between you, I don't know, but you knew where David was. And he said, look, my dad isn't going to help you, and so therefore we're going to have to part company. So, Jonathan, you say to David, so David, you come out here. This is, without Saul knowing, this is what you say. Off you go.
Go in peace for what we have sworn, friendship with each other in the name of the Lord, saying the Lord is witness between you and me and between you, your descendants and my descendants forever.
Wonderful. So they've made that covenant. We're going to look after each other forever. So they shake hands. You go back to the king and you go back way over there and you start living in the cave of Adullam. And 400 people start mixing with you, all kind of people who are in distress and debt and in all kinds of fear. And we don't know exactly how long these two friends are separated, but there becomes a point when David learns that Saul is still trying to get David, and he sent men out to try and find David, and they still can't find David. So Saul is getting angry. He's reaching for his spear again, but he doesn't know who to throw it to. He can't quite decide. And so he's angry. So he decides he's going to go and look for himself. So Jonathan manages to find out where David is. So come over here. And he has one more thing to say to him. A lot to say. Well, you chose this part. Here we go then. So Jonathan said,
don't be afraid. My father Saul will not lay a hand on you. You will be king over Israel, and I will be your second to you. Even my father Saul knows this.
Okay, so Jonathan had that confidence of thinking that Saul won't go through with it. And even though Jonathan knew that he should be the next king, he said, actually, David, I know that you're going to be the next king, and I will be your second. So that's a huge amount of humility going on in Jonathan to be able to be willing to give that up because he recognized that David was anointed king. So you shake hands, you go back, and the sad thing here now is that's the last time we hear of David meeting with Jonathan. Because Jonathan and Saul, they go off to fight the Philistines, and they both die. So Jonathan and Saul are now out of the story. Or are they? So when David hears that Saul and Jonathan have died, even though Saul was out to get him all the time, he knew he was the anointed king. And when he heard that Jonathan and Saul had both died, he wept. He wept and he wept. Now, this is where Mephibosheth comes in. You see, you thought I'd forgotten you, and I haven't. David probably didn't even know that Jonathan had a son, because he'd been away in the cave, possibly, when the son was born. But Saul had told everybody that belonged to him that David was an evil man. He was out to get rid of his kingdom. Everybody thought David was a dangerous man. So when Saul died, everybody connected with Saul's family were full of fear. So Mephibosheth is looked after by a nanny. Anybody want to be the nanny of Mephibosheth? Come on then, come and be the nanny. Now, you need to escape because you think David's going to come. Now Saul's dead, David's going to come. He's going to destroy grandson as well. So you need to take Mephibosheth to a safe place. So if you can go right round the church and come back over here to this black spot over here, please. And so off you go. You can take Teddy with you as well if you want to because you're still five. Okay, no, okay, you can leave Teddy there then, okay. Off to a place as far away as possible. We don't know exactly how far, but it was in a place that I think sounds a little bit like a Western. It was called Lodibar. Oh, we're going to Lodibar. And that place that actually means no pasture or dryness. Fancy going to a place that's dry with no pasture. What a horrible thing. So they arrive at Lodibar. I don't know why they chose that place, where there's some connections. So if you want to come sit up here, this is Lodibar on here. It's Lodi speaker. And the only thing is we forgot to mention is that during your journey, Nanny dropped you. Yes, and she's only five, or he's only five, and you dropped the baby, or dropped the dog. And as a result, your legs became so damaged that you never walked again. What kind of nanny were you? So I'm just going to tie your legs up. Because so you lived to tell the tale, but now you were lame and could not walk. And so now you're in the place of no pasture, very dry. Is that nice and tight? Has that stopped the blood yet? Okay. Oh, there we go. Your shoes will be going a different colour in just a minute. Okay, there we go. So now you can't, and you're now in Lodibar. Now, how long Mephibosheth was in Lodibar, we don't quite know. But Mephibosheth would have been full of fear of David. And as far as Mephibosheth was concerned, probably blamed David for everything that had happened. I was the grandson of the king. I should be living in the palace, but now because of David, I'm living in Lodibar, the place of no pasture. I've gone from the palace to the pit. Probably thinking at any moment, David could come and get Mephibosheth. How scary. So at some point, David, you come and take the royal throne. So if you'd like to come and take the throne up here, please. Don't need that javelin because you're not that kind of daffodil. And he needs some guards because he's the king. Oh, I need to give you a crown, don't I, really? Here, I have a crown. There we go. Right. Could the guards come forward, please? We've chosen a couple of guards to come and work on your behalf. Okay, let's come and stand over here, please, and stand in front of your king. David is now king, and he remembers the covenant that he had set up with Jonathan all those years ago. Don't know how long ago it was, but he remembered. And the promises that they both had made were, I will fight for you. I will keep you safe. Any harm goes to you, we'll fight as one man. And if anything happens to you, I will look after your family. Now, Jonathan had died. David now wanted to know, is there anybody from Jonathan's family? So he says,
is there anyone still left of the house of Saul to whom I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake?
And the people in his household, Ziba was a servant who had served Saul. And he said, well, actually, yes, there was a guy called Mephibosheth. He was the grandson. He's lame. And he went, they knew, to a place called Lodibar. So King David said, go and find him. So the guards went all the way to Lodibar to find Mephibosheth. Now, Mephibosheth had probably got used to living in Lodibar by now, probably done some decoration, maybe bought some furniture and all kind of things. Obviously, Nanny would have done that because you couldn't get out because you can't walk. And so would have made it quite home, but may have had still a little bit of fear, but it's been a while. Probably David's forgotten all about him. And so he's trying to make a life for himself in Lodibar until there's a sound of knocking at the door. And when Nanny opens the door, she's shocked. And now Mephibosheth is really worried. Have a little shake. Oh, okay, so the guards have come to take Mephibosheth back. So I don't know what happens to you in the story, so you can stay in Lodibar because you dropped Mephibosheth. Shame on you. I think you should. Anyway, so the guards carry Mephibosheth back to the king. Right, so these guards are going to carry you. Okay, there we go. Very good. Now, just imagine how Mephibosheth must have been feeling. The fears that he'd had all this time about what's going to happen to him. Not only has Saul died, and his granddad, not only has his dad died, but now surely his life is going to be taken as well. What's going to happen? The fear that he must have felt as he was being carried to the house. And so as they arrived near the king's house, unlike the nanny, they didn't drop Mephibosheth. We don't know actually how old Mephibosheth is at the time. It is possible that he actually has a son by this time. Can't quite work out from the scriptures as to whether or not that's later. So you don't just pop down here in front of the king. Okay, thank you very much, guards. And you can go back to your tea and coffee, whatever you do when you're off duty. So David is now presented with Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth is full of fear. Be full of fear. Have a shake. What's going to happen to me? And David says this.
Don't be afraid, for I will surely show you kindness and for sake of your father, Jonathan. I will restore to you all the land that belonged to your grandfather, Saul. And you will always eat at my table.
Wow, so I will restore all the land that belonged to your grandfather. So he gave all the land. So here we got some flowers for you. There we are. And also along with the land would have perhaps come some livestock. So we've got a sheep and a cow. There we go, sheep and cow. And then, of course, all the servants as well started to become yours. So there you go. There's some servants for you. And there's possibly 36, maybe as many as 36 of those as Ziba and his family were all going to look after that land for you. But as David said, have you still got your piece of paper? Do you want to read that last bit again for us?
I will restore to you all the land that belonged to your grandfather, Saul, and you will always eat at my table.
You'll always eat at my table. And he goes on to say, like one of the king's sons. How amazing is that? Here's Mephibosheth, who's thinking his life is going to end. But instead, David, as a good daffodil, did lots of good in giving everything back to Mephibosheth and even said, I'm going to treat you as one of the king's sons. Let's give you a crown. There you go. So what an amazing experience to be able to go from the greatest fear to the greatest joy. Right. Thank you, David. You may go. Would you like to be released, Mephibosheth? A round of applause for all our actors today, please. There we go. Thank you very much. As far as I know, no children were hurt in the making of this service. So, whilst the story of Mephibosheth in itself is absolutely wonderful, it also points us to another story that's absolutely wonderful. And that's the story of what Jesus has done for us. You see, Mephibosheth was able to come and dine as one of the king's sons, not because of anything that he had done, but solely on the basis of the covenant that David and Jonathan had made all those years ago. Because they made a commitment to each other, and David had promised that he would look after Saul's family and Jonathan's family. So as a result, Mephibosheth benefited from that. And when we think of what Jesus has done for us, we know the story that Jesus gave his life for us. He said, this is the new covenant in my blood. Jesus said, all your sin and the punishment that goes with it, I'm going to carry it on the cross for you. This is my love for you. He didn't just say, here's a robe, here's a sword. He said, I'm giving all of my life to you. Everything of me I'm giving to you, said Jesus. I am willing to die for you, give my whole life for you because I love you. So that all those who connect with Jesus and what he's done in asking for forgiveness of their sin, they may also be treated like sons and daughters of the king. So there's a similar message there. Mephibosheth's story, great story on its own, but I think it also points us to what I suggest is an even greater story, which is the story of what Jesus has done for us. And because of what he's done, we may all be blessed greatly. So what we're going to do in just a moment, bring forward our daffodils. This is optional, don't have to do this, but it's a way symbolically to speak of the idea that maybe we are in dryness, we might be in a Lodibar experience. That's the place where there is no pasture, but the Lord said in Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, he leads me beside green pastures. And then Jesus said, I'm the good shepherd. So he wants to lead us beside green pastures. He doesn't want us to be in Lodibar, which is dry and no pasture. He wants us to come to the place of blessing. And your daffodil, just like your representation of your life, can be identified with something good or something not so good in your life. The good bits or the non-good bits. The things that have caused you joy or the things that have caused you pain. Where you've been blessing to somebody else by being kind, or where Maybe things we've done that have hurt other people, where things we've done have encouraged us or things have brought us fear. And when we bring to him our stuff, he will want to replace that by saying, you are a son and daughter of the king. So just think for a moment. We're going to have a word of prayer. Then I'm going to ask you to bring up your daffodil and just ask you to take a little bit of blue tack and put it on the top petal and then just stick it at the base of the cross, whatever it represents. So it could be that your daffodil represents something that's brought you great joy in your life and you're bringing it forward and saying, thank you, Lord, for this in my life. Or it could be that there is something that you know that perhaps is not right in your life, something you perhaps have done wrong, and you want to bring it to the Lord and say, please forgive me for what I have done as you bring it forward and bring it to the cross. It could represent something you're afraid of. And as you bring it to the cross, you're saying, Lord, please give me strength and courage. It could be that it's something you're unsure about, and you bring your daffodil and say, Lord, please guide me, bring clarity. Or it could be that you're not a Christian this morning, but maybe this morning you would like to give your life to Jesus. And so as actually you bring your daffodil, that could be symbolic of you actually saying, I want to give all of my life to you, Lord, because you've given all of your life to me. And you ask Jesus into your life. Good morning. Ask Jesus into your life, and you ask him to come and change you, forgive you, and make you new, whatever it represents. And then what will happen is there will be here a table with the cardboard crowns. So once you put your daffodil on here, just pick up a crown and pop it on. And for our last song, then we will sing with our crowns on. So before we do that, let's just pray together and just think for what your daffodil might represent. Lord, we just pray now as we take part in this symbolic gesture, Lord, of saying something in my life I want to give to you in recognition that you have given all of your life for me. So, Lord, as we think about the wonder of the cross, we come to you with grateful hearts that you have provided for us in such a way that we can be seen as sons and daughters of the King and receive your blessing. In Jesus' name, amen.